My name is Eric Wall. I live in Seattle, Washington. I am Grant Wall's brother. I'm gay. I am the reason he wore the rainbow shirt to the World Cup. My brother was healthy. He told me he received death threats. I do not believe my brother just died. I believe he was killed.
Hey, what's going on, folks? I have a special guest with me today to go over the stories. So U.S. journalist Grant Wall, who became more famous for wearing a rainbow shirt at the World Cup in Qatar, really annoying locals and nationals, ended up dead in that country. Mainstream news is reporting that he collapsed, which is leading to quote-unquote conspiracy theories that he was either killed for his pro-LGBT views, and a lot of people also speculating that it could have been from the mRNA injections, which he was a fanatic of. Well, I'm not going to claim either one because I have no idea. I'm just reporting the news, and we'll talk about it. Also, more Twitter files dropped from Elon Musk, and when asked if any political candidates in the US or elsewhere were subject to shadow banning while they were running for office or seeking re-election, he said yes. Seems like a huge deal. What will be done about it? Who knows? But as he likes to say, sunlight is the best disinfectant. And he also tweeted, Twitter is both a social media company and a crime scene. And lastly, we'll weigh in on Jordan Peterson, who's been melting down on Twitter all week because he doesn't want people to be anonymous on the platform. Is that a good idea to take away people's anonymity? We'll talk about it as well. And after this live stream, we're gonna go behind my Patreon paywall. So go to patreon.com/raretalk to see an extended hour with me and Clint chatting behind there. Hope you enjoy the show. Starts now.
It's the Dream Rare Podcast. Welcome to the show. The way to get the news at the desk or on the road. Let's go. God is great and success in our control. The world is crazy, but we get better from obstacles. It's the Dream Rare Podcast. Welcome to the show. The way to get the news at the desk or on the road. Let's go. God is great and success in our control. The world is crazy, but we get better from obstacles.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Rare Podcast. I owe my Patreon people a private Dream Rare secret podcast, so I'm going to do that. After like 30, 40 minutes, we're going to cut it off, put it behind the paywall. I don't do that very often, but I owe Patreon and also Facebook. We will do a live stream next week as well. I know I owe you guys that too. I'm here with Clint from Liberty Lockdown to join me today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Anomaly. It's a pleasure as always, man. We got a lot of news to cover.
Yeah, so the first story is Grant Wall, who... I guess he was probably famous in his own right as a sports journalist, famous enough to get to go to, first of all, how do you say Qatar? I used to say Qatar, then people corrected me. Then I said Qatar, and then people laughed at me. So now I just say QAnon because I'm tired of being laughed at. How do you say it?
I had always said Qatar, and then I was educated that it is, in fact, Qatar. And now I'm watching the news story on this, and it's back to Qatar. So I have no clue, bro.
I'm tired of being laughed at. It makes me feel dumb. You know, I'm like, Qatar, Qatar, Qatar. So it's QAnon now, you know. Sorry to the entire nation. I don't mean to disrespect. I'm just tired of being laughed at. But anyway, yeah, he must have been a big deal in the sports community to get to go there because that's a high, I would say, position. And he wore the rainbow shirt a couple weeks ago and was purposely defying the government and the culture. And now he's dead. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I mean, and he was also, this is like a perfect Alex Jones rabbit hole because you got the potential conspiracy theory realm that you can go with, you know, the substance that he wanted to ingest into his body. And he even tweeted out repeatedly.
Right. He was like a fanatic. Like he was like, I got boosted. Exactly. I got it. You got to get it. You're going to like, yeah, he was wilding with that.
That, and then he also went into a Muslim country that is not so fond of the LGBT movement and they did not like the attire that he was wearing. And, you know, it's an authoritarian type place and certainly some shenanigans could have happened in that regard too. So I'm open to anything. You have any thesis?
We definitely need some sort of Scooby-Doo or Sherlock Holmes on the case because yeah, like you said, one, I think the least likely scenario in my opinion is that he just randomly died. I mean, he seemed pretty young and healthy. Maybe he got really sick, you know, and caught an illness, but you know, the Muslims definitely don't play. And as far as the, you know, substance that must not be named, there's really no investigation on that. Cause usually it's just a bunch of cover-ups and, you know, kind of crossovers. So yeah, I don't know really if I have a strong opinion on it. I guess I'm interested to see where the investigation goes.
Yeah. I mean, obviously his brother thinks that, that it was the Qataris that were involved in it, according to his little, I don't know, Instagram live or whatever he did. I wouldn't jump to that conclusion, to be honest. I think that that would be a very over the top response to someone just wearing a shirt you don't like, but he did tweet it out and, you know, try and make it a big black eye upon their nation. And then he also, the day prior, he wrote an article about, I think it was something to the effect of like slave labor basically being used for the development of the playing fields for the World Cup. So they could have not liked both of those things and decided to go that route, but it's such a bad look, especially if it's able to be proven. I mean, you look at the Jamal Khashoggi, this is another name I don't know how to pronounce because no one really ever gets it right. And what happened with the Saudis, and you know, I find it hard to believe they would go that route again. I don't know.
Yeah, with that too, someone's saying in the comments, I mean, I just kind of casually read that they think it's like a psychological operation. So that's even another theory to throw into it. With the Jamal Khashoggi thing, that I looked into that because that was really interesting, because they were using that against Trump and saying, we got to go for Saudi. He was married to somebody, I think, in the royal family in Wales. He was the trusted guy who would go around with bin Laden. And I guess he had bin Laden's trust to get all those interviews. So I always just thought it's like, you know, they acted like he was just some random journalist. And I'm not saying that that makes it right for what happened. Obviously, it didn't. But this guy lived a dangerous life. He was definitely more than what they were saying. And, you know, anytime the Democrats and the media just jump on everything and try to blame someone, I'm skeptical whether it's true or not. So, yeah, that you know, I don't know what happened there. And with
they kind of wrote a hagiography for his career, because like from what I had seen, he wasn't like a prolifically published writer in the U.S. But then as soon as he was assassinated, allegedly, he became, you know, one of the most profound and prolific and intrepid reporters to ever come out of Saudi Arabia and work in America. To me, he struck me as having, you know, State Department ties, but I can't prove anything. So I'll just leave it at that.
Definitely the U.S. government was most likely somewhat involved in him if they were that upset that he died. I mean, I'm not saying for sure, but he was bin Laden's go-to reporter. So, I mean, you don't get to that level without being tied into someone, whether it's Al-Qaeda, America, you know, have like playing some sort of game. It's an absolute dangerous game. But the fact that they cared so much, I mean, we could see when they don't care about people like Snowden or Assange, you know, versus this guy that was like more important to them than anyone. Definitely worth considering. And before we move on with the Qatar thing, first of all, I want to say it's obviously sad when people lose a family member, something happens. No matter what happened, it's always a sad time. But I do want to say to especially liberals in America and like the gay community and whatever, I feel like they don't know how good they have it in this country. And they always complain about America and they always act like this is the worst place ever. And they're totally delusional. To Singapore just passed a law that you can't basically have sex out of wedlock, which used to be a rule in Europe and America as well, like back in the day. I don't know if it was enforced that tightly, but it was a rule. So there's way more conservative places. This is probably one of the most liberal and gay places in the world. And they act like they're always being oppressed here. And then they go over to a country that really doesn't tolerate it and flaunt it like they're in San Francisco. And then don't understand that they're not going to get the same result.
Well, right. And they also will oftentimes be completely silent on the treatment of gay community in, you know, Iran or Saudi Arabia and things like that. And it's like, look, it is better. Genuinely, it is better here. I mean, maybe Canada competes with us in terms of wokeness and acceptance, but I don't think that anywhere else really comes close. So I don't understand, you know, why they're constantly framing the U.S. as being this really homophobic, anti-gay community. It's like we have gay people on TV every single night. Like, go to the Middle East and see if there's a single one ever.
Right. Someone said Indonesia, not Singapore. Possibly. I'd have to look it up if I made a mistake. I apologize. Yeah. And I have a theory. I mean, I don't know if it's a theory. People say New World Order and, you know, one world government. I call it the liberal gay world order now because I think it's more accurate, where it's like, you know, everywhere that's not gay in the world, they want to make it gayer. Like, you know, it's the dream of like, you know, Out Magazine and San Francisco Pride Parades, where it's like our country, it seems like everyone we beef with, like whether it's Russia or Iran, I'm not saying they're great. I'm just saying everywhere that's not gay, the liberal gay world order wants to come and sprinkle rainbow flags.
Yeah, well, and it could be the catalyst for World War III. I mean, if you've heard what Putin and the Russian people are saying. They're constantly talking about how the Americans are being inundated with this gay agenda, this propagandistic push for it's, you know, just from my personal opinion, I don't have any problem with anybody being gay as an adult. I do have a sincere disagreement and confusion when you start to push these type of ideals onto children. And I don't understand why it's occurring. I don't know how much older I am than you, but certainly when I was a kid, there was no education about sex at all in elementary school. And now it's like, why are we talking about gay things in elementary school? It's just so puzzling. So much so that, you know, DeSantis comes out with that bill just banning it up until I think it was 9 or 10 years old, which is elementary school. And they call it the Don't Say Gay bill. It's like, he's just saying what has always been the case is that we don't talk about sex and gender with children. You know, like, wait till middle school. Can you not just wait till middle school? And what it strikes me as is, like, they realize that kids at that age group are the most impressionable. And that's why they're going after them at that age group. And I just can't come away with any other conclusion than that.
Yeah. And the left, it always becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy of the slippery slope. Like, the hardline Muslim or Christian 20 years ago was like, hey, if you let them do this, it's going to lead to all this. And most people were like, no, it's not. And then they almost do become that, where, you know, it's just, it's weird that they're squandering, I think, this opportunity in America, where this is a very small window. Most societies, I think, in history, I'm not saying some people weren't doing some closeted gay stuff or something. I'm sure they were back in the day as well. But as far as like the open acceptance, I think this is the minority of human history where this is accepted. And in America, it's still maybe the majority, but still in like the 50-50, where this isn't allowed everywhere, this isn't accepted everywhere, this isn't promoted everywhere. It's probably not promoted or exported more anywhere than in the United States. And the people in the United States seem to hate the country when they're gay, but then they constantly act like this is the worst place in the world and they're so oppressed. And I'm not saying what happened in Qatar's right, and I don't know what really happened, but, you know, they go over there and act like they're in San Francisco or in Texas. And the truth is, like, conservatives in America are actually like liberal compared to a lot of the world. And they hate conservatives here so much and embrace other conservatives because they're different races, thinking, oh, well, they're minorities, they agree with me. It's like, they don't actually at all.
No, that's a great point. And also, just to add on to the fire here, you know, we have Lloyd Austin in our State Department, our military, that's now putting up, you know, rainbow flags on some of our embassies in these nations that are very not pro-LGBT. And it just, like, if you want to look like a conquering army, well, then bring in a flag that they find to be reprehensible. You know, whether you accept the gay community is really separate to what that message that you're sending to the people of that nation that you're, like, it's like, it looks like conquest. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm sure you've seen the picture that circulated. I think it was London, and it was like 1,000 different rainbow flags that were just lining the streets. And it's like, well, this looks like a conquering army almost. And even though I don't find the gay people to be an issue in any real way, it's for those that do, you're going to have some pushback eventually. And I think that that's a real concern that they probably ought to be privy to.
Yeah, I hear you. Same with the Ukraine flag. It's like certain politicians in America put that before the American flag. I think Kinzinger did that on his thing. And it's like, Dude, no matter what flag you put there, it's just a little weird to put another country's flag before your own flag when you're serving our government. How many people in America have zero loyalty to our country? Probably more than a dozen.
Yeah, there's only three flags really that you're allowed to do that with. It's the Pride flag, the Ukraine flag, and the Israeli.
Yeah.
just being honest, that's what you'll see a lot of.
Right. And I've noticed that too on Twitter. Like, anytime somebody gets upset, it's almost like on cue, they have either the rainbow flag, the Israeli flag, or the Ukraine flag. You know, it's almost the Ukraine ones. And then it's like boosted. They're almost becoming like a meme of what people make fun of them for doing it, where I actually have to search. And I'm like, because there are right wing sarcastic accounts nowadays where they're like, he, him, you know, they're doing all this stuff. And I'm like, is this a right wing troll pretending to be a crazy left winger? Or is this an actual crazy left winger that
I can't ever tell. I do the same thing, though, because I used to have a policy of just blocking anyone with the Ukraine flag that would reply to me. And then I realized that there was so many people that were trolling being those type of people that I was like, all right, I better go look at their profile for a second before I pull the trigger.
Right. Babylon B is like 50%. Everything that they say ends up becoming an actual story within like a year. Parodies become reality. Well, the next story I want to talk about, there's been Twitter files and Elon's been dropping them slowly. First, I want to get your opinion because I saw Tim Pool had said, you know, I wish he would just drop them all at once. Some people agreed and disagreed. Do you think it's a good idea to spread them all out, or do you think it's a better idea to like drop everything at once and let the media go at it?
Well, from my vantage point, because, you know, you probably feel similarly, like I would like to have something that I discover that can be my own so that I can actually do an episode on it and not just be parroting what everyone else is doing. So like, I would like to have the full file so that I could just go to work. But beyond that, I think that, you know, in terms of digestibility and in terms of having a lasting impact, they're actually handling it in a really good way, because every time there's a new drop, it's like this firestorm. And if you've noticed, every time they put out one of those threads, it's like 20 minutes before Tucker Carlson starts. So Tucker ends up covering it for his entire show, and he's the number one show on TV. Like there seems to be some real, marketing genius behind what they're doing. So I can't knock it in that regard. I think my only critique would be that I don't really trust Barry Weiss and what's his name?
Matt Taibbi.
Yeah, I mean, they're good. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're good, but they still have pretty hard liberal leanings. And from my end, I would just like to see maybe 5 or 6 or 7 reporters. Some people like Cernovich would have been amazing to have on that. Even you, like, it would have been awesome to have someone that I actually believe in their analysis to be digging through this stuff, because really it's cultivated. Like, they could be leaving stuff on the cutting room floor that to you and I would be very interesting.
That is interesting. That's a good point. Yeah. I wonder if he did that purposely, like went with left-wing journalists to be like, oh, you know, it's not right-wing, it's left-wing journalists doing it. But also, like you said, I mean, someone had brought to my attention that, you know, Barry Weiss, although, you know, she goes on Joe Rogan and she can be very like critical of the left, she also, you know, has seemingly been pro-censorship in the past. I know she tweeted out the Anti-Defamation League and saying like, good thing they're cracking down. So
exactly.
I hear what you're saying is they're getting the information and possibly leaving out some bombshells that don't suit their needs or something.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that, and then also Jim Baker, which was the former like top attorney for the FBI, was then the top attorney for Twitter. It appears that he was also, sorting what information was being delivered to Barry Weiss and Taibbi. So like, we're missing a lot of the big picture here, and I don't know that we'll ever see it. And I think that the trickle factor kind of allows the competing media apparatus to say, oh, this is a nothing burger. Because every time it's just like a little window into what actually occurred, but it's never the full picture. So because of that, they're able to say, oh, well, they made it sound like it was going to be a big deal, and now it's just this. So that's not a big deal. Nothing burger. And they just parrot it over and over again. So once again, we're going to be left divided as a people, where half the country thinks that this is a really big deal and an obvious First Amendment violation because the FBI was interfering with private businesses and their censorship decisions. And then the other half is going to say, oh, this was nothing.
Right. So this was Ian Miles Chiang. He says, so here's a question for Elon Musk and Barry Weiss or any political candidates, either in the United States or elsewhere, subject to shadow banning while they were running for office or seeking re-election. And he said, yes, of course we knew this. But, you know, to have actual proof from the guy who bought Twitter and has the information is bigger for sure. All this release is bigger. The slow roll, we're getting information. He always says sunlight is the best disinfectant. Almost like maybe he thinks, well, maybe nothing will be done about it, but if I bring it to light, then at least, you know, maybe people will not feel so emboldened to do this over and over again. Definitely it is a bombshell that we all knew. I mean, Twitter's not as bad. I would say it's the least bad out of Facebook, Google, and YouTube. I already know that Google and YouTube are shadow banning. I'm good enough with like, how codes work and, you know, algorithms. Like I know this stuff just from being on the internet for so long. I know they're shadow banning me. When you search anomaly, my channel doesn't even come up, or my videos. Sometimes it's 4 other videos. Like, of course, I mean, that doesn't naturally happen. It didn't happen 5 years ago. So, you know, will something be done about this, you think, or is this just going to go by?
I mean, I had Judge Andrew Napolitano on my show yesterday, and we were talking about it, and he basically says, you know, if this was just bias from the private actors, the Yoel Ross of the world, who are hard left, you know, operatives, basically, then there's nothing you can do legally. I think that the real test will be, will a intrepid district attorney or attorneys general reach out to someone or have someone in Congress or, you know, some person that's actually at a position of power say, we're going to investigate this and we're going to, you know, demand disclosure and we're going to have basically interrogations of these people to figure out what exactly were the communications. Like, did the FBI keep track of the minutes when they were having these conversations with Yoel Roth? Because at this point, we know he was meeting with them every week, but we don't really know the context beyond that. So I think that's right. What we need to see.
Yeah, with Elon and Eliza Blue, who is a human trafficking, activist, yeah. You know, against right. it, obviously. There's been a lot of communication between them where Elon has basically confirmed to her and other people that Yoel Roth was really running the show. I seen her post some sort of old tweet of his about kids in high school and like Grindr. Like everything with this guy was about Grindr, which is some gay dating app where it's like, dude, like, was that the number? I mean, I get, you know, straight people like Tinder. I guess he liked Grindr. I understand people like to date and do stuff, but like, was that his whole life? Because it seemed like everything, whether it was like high school students or like this guy's always writing, like, you know, all this writing about Grindr like that. He's like a professional Grindr journalist.
He wrote his PhD thesis on it.
I mean, dude.
No bullshit. No exaggeration. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I think what we're really dealing with is like people that were bullied in high school for their sexuality or their gender orientation or whatever you want to call it. They then get into not just academia, but then to the highest level of basically HR. That's what he was. He was like a human resources rep, because anytime you hear this guy interviewed, he's just talking about the danger, the sincere danger that exists because of hate speech and how that's going to, you know, cost lives. And I couldn't disagree more. I don't understand this entire belief system that words ultimately are violence. And I think that if you have someone that has that belief system that's in that position, well, then you're doomed. You're going to have a terrible terms of service that ultimately bans basically anyone of, you know, right of mouth.
Right. And, you know, when it comes to the rainbow community, I would say groups like Gays Against Groomers, like Jamie Mitchell and others, that more builds trust with, you know, skeptical people who are like, what's really going on there when you're actively calling out stuff. And the UL Ross and the whatever his name, the Wiener guy from like San Francisco, like always playing the victim, always exaggerating, oh, yeah. You know, that doesn't build trust. It more just seems kind of like sneaky and creepy. So, you know, I would say if you're trying to build trust and have people respect you, you know, writing op-eds on Grindr all the time and playing the victim probably won't work well, you know, but you know, everybody has their own strategy.
Well, I don't mind if he wants to make that his whole life's work, that's fine. But like at the same time, then maybe don't question whether or not a child can consent to sleeping with their teacher.
You know? Right. Like, not the play.
Yeah. What are we talking about here? The overlap starts to get concerning is all I'm saying.
Right. And it's pretty wild that what we're talking about would have been considered like a fringe issue, but Elon Musk is on Twitter right now weighing in on it, basically saying it's alarming. So it's pretty, it's similar to Trump where, you know, obviously Trump wasn't perfect, but it was really great to have the president of the United States saying wild stuff to make me feel less crazy. Cause I like, and I'm not saying crazy in a bad way. I'm saying crazy in a good way, like crazy raw stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, that's something that like people would just like whisper. Now the president of the United States is saying it. So whether people trust or like Elon or not, it is kind of nice to have someone as rich and powerful as him saying stuff that we've all been saying for years, just like on Twitter, because it makes it a lot harder for them to crack down on everyone else speaking truth or having opinions when Elon or Trump is kind of like at the head being like, yeah, I'm saying it too. What are you going to do? I'm the president. Right? I run Twitter now. Oh, right. You're going to call this like anti something? Well, I just said it and I'm getting more retweets than you. It's pretty fun.
No, it's definitely a shift in the power dynamic. And what I really appreciate is that he has repeatedly called this a crime scene.
Right.
And, you know, he is hinting at like, hey, where are the prosecutors? Like what? Like, bring them in. Oh, like we have people that need to be in prison. And I think he's right. And it not just for the election stuff, but also for the child sexual content stuff that was not being censored, even though they claimed that they were trying to. And then also the forced medication, the propaganda for lockdowns. Like, there is so much that falls into this censorship protocols that they had implemented that I just feel like basically this is as much proof as we have ever had of a huge psychological operation that began in earnest 3 years ago. It certainly has its early attempts years prior, if not decades prior, but it seems like the 2020 period was when, like, it was a full court press to complete narrative control.
Right. And, you know, Ye was right about Instagram becoming a porn website. And I understand, like, if it's all your algorithm, so you're not going to see stuff if you don't click on it. But I have to say, as somebody that, like, I get sports stuff, I do get women in my feed as well, but I get, like, MMA, basketball, things that I care about, you know, but also women sometimes. It's become a full-on porn thing. And it's not, they used to be like, you can't show that, but now they have thousands, millions of accounts literally posting full-blown pornography
on Instagram.
Wow. Yeah. And they're not blocking it. So what Ye was saying, and people were like, it's just your algorithm. On one hand, yes, you're out. If you look at women, they're going to show you women. If you look at sports, they're going to show you sports. But what people have to understand, the women that they used to show, say, like 5-6 months ago, it's just a fitness model, you know, quote unquote model, you know, right. But now it's just porn. And it's like, what? They're so focused on shutting down, in my view, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Google, and Twitter before Elon got them. They're so focused on shutting down criticism of the Yoel Roths of the world, you know, criticism of Democrats, anything right wing, anything conservative. They're so focused on that that they're allowing child exploitation, full-blown porn. I mean, pornography is literally allowed on Twitter, but Instagram like pretends like, oh, we're against it. They've lost complete control of it over the last couple of months. Yeah. And they don't care though, because they're too busy policing what you said about, you know, Zelensky. Like, this shows the real world consequences of political correctness. And it's the same thing with the whole country. Like I was explaining to, I had the debate with Rudy Rockman, a Israeli Jewish rights activist, and he was saying that like Jews in New York City are getting attacked at like high rates of hate crime. And I was like, you know, I feel bad for Jews in New York City and everyone in New York City, because I would say you're more at risk as a Jew in New York because the crime is so high. And a lot of these criminals, they don't care if you're white or Jewish or you're Christian. They don't care. You know what I'm saying? They want to know if you have a Rolex. They want to know if you're old enough. They don't care if you're Asian. And a lot of it isn't being done as a racial crime against an Asian or against a Jew. It's just these cities aren't safe anymore. So exactly. When you're so focused on policing the speech of a podcast that your group is also voting for the Democratic Party, which just seems completely oblivious of how to kind of crack down on it. You know, the real world consequences happen when you go after speech policing and politics as opposed to actual crime, actual human trafficking, actual, you know, degeneracy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it shows what their priorities are. You know, narrative control is what they care about. And I think even more broadly than just right wingers that are being suppressed, it's just people that are against the government in its current form in any way, because obviously the libertarian community and even some left-wing activists that are anti-war also have been suppressed on Twitter. So this is, in my view, the tie that binds is like, if you oppose the current regime, then you are, that's their focus. They need to suppress you as hard as possible. And from an optimistic vantage point, that shows to me that they're weak. You know, that they can't deal with anything else, because there's so many people that are saying so many things that they find distasteful that occupies their entire day. Like that, that's progress, in my opinion.
And I think it's just the truth, because like you said, the anti-war progressives or people like Jimmy Dore, well, we probably disagree with a lot of his domestic policy, but he hits home, critical of the Democrats. You know, they hate him just as much as they hate a right winger, because you know, he tells the truth sometimes. And anybody who even hints on the truth, whether it's libertarian, progressive, conservative, they hate that. On the note of us winning and, you know, this glorious kind of, you know, turning it around, white pill moment, we feel good. You know, one of the best things that Elon did, I didn't understand at the time, but when he gave everyone blue check marks, it kind of just got annoying, because like every troll, we'll get into that later, was like, had a blue check and I'm getting confused. Well, really what it did is it took power away from these loser journalists at like Huffington Post and Washington Post, who nobody cares about. They have no engagement, but all they ever had was that blue check that made them so special on Twitter. And I was guilty of it without knowing, is when a blue check like responded to me, I'd feel like I had to respond to them, even though no one cared about them. I'm like, oh, I'm going to respond to this person and you know, disagree with them. I was giving them more power just because they had a blue check mark. Now that everyone has a blue check mark, I don't care if it's a troll or a Washington Post. Elon actually gave power back to the people by making these blue check losers that nobody likes completely irrelevant on Twitter. And now nobody respects them slightly more. Like, you know, the dude with the frog emoji or like the like clown emoji, you know, with a vaccine stuck in his head, like he's got the same blue check mark, you know, so it's pretty funny.
Well, the irony is like the Marxists talk about, you know, power to the people, and yet the Marxists are the ones that hate Elon more than anybody right now. So there's some conflict there for sure.
Right. Last story I want to talk about is our good friend Jordan Peterson, who has been having a meltdown this week. I mean, I'm not going to read all his tweets in a Jordan Peterson accent, which I would if I had a good Jordan Peterson accent.
Oh, man, I wish you did.
Clean your room. Clean your room. No, I don't know. That was not good. But, you know, basically he's having like a meltdown every day because his theory is like, you know, he doesn't like when people like call him like Jordan Pooperson or like, you know, Juden Peterstein, you know, when he has a thing with Netanyahu, like they're making all these jokes, like, and he gets really upset. And he's like, yo, I don't think people should be anonymous on Twitter because, you know, that's where the trolls and the demons are. And like, you know, everybody should have to show their name. I guess, what do you think about that logic?
I mean, it's just sad because he, you know, I will always appreciate who he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and he can still deliver some beautiful messages to the world. So I'm not totally discounting the guy, but it's right. it's so obvious to me that like he's a boomer on the internet, and he can't figure out like the obvious tools to stop some of the inundation of hate that he's receiving. It's like, yo, you know, you can mute words, you know, you can block, you know, you can make it so that you only see replies from people you follow or from people that are verified. Like you can do that if you wanted to. He doesn't do any of it. He just sits there and he bitches all day. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like just use the tools. They're there.
Right.
It's sad.
It is sad because also I understand when you're that famous and that popular, people are going to hate you for telling the truth. Like he has gotten to that status of he's like a lightning rod for left wingers. But the funny thing is this week, he's not even fighting with the left wingers. He's fighting with the right. And I follow him and it's like, he's getting ratioed. I put I think it was like a frog. And it said like, if you get ratioed by this frog, your post sucks. And it got like 5,000 likes and his original thing got 2,000 likes. It was like the ratio, your post. And I just put like a sad face. It was just like kind of just trolling him. Sure. But I'm thinking like, I understand you're going to get hate for good takes sometimes, but his takes have been bad. And instead of like, you know, understanding that he's saying stuff that people don't like, he just kind of melts down. So I guess my advice would be, as somebody that thinks he also does some good stuff, like, you know, somebody tell him to stop reading comments and to get off of Twitter. Joe Rogan doesn't read any comments. That's exactly his strategy. I think Jordan Peterson needs to do that because he's too emotional and fragile at comments. And also it could drive anybody crazy when you argue too much. I've had those moments too, where you get like caught in this loop of arguing with people, and I've done it too and drove myself crazy. So it's like, just, yeah, you know, get the guy off Twitter, maybe not reading comments.
Dude, I've spent an entire day arguing with someone one time, and I was like, oh, never doing that again. That was a complete waste of my life. What am I doing? But what I think is really ironic about all this is like, Jordan Peterson came to prominence because he understood what compelled speech means. He basically made his name off of taking a courageous stance on behalf of free speech and identifying the value of speech rights. And yet he can't identify the obvious truth that being an anonymous person online in a tyrannical world is to the society's benefit. It allows people that like, And I've made this point to Cernovich when we were going back and forth, that I get DMs from people that work in the military, that work in the, you know, in the government, in all sorts of positions, and in the medical field. Like I have gotten airline pilots. I have gotten incredible on the ground, you know, firsthand reports from people that they send me verification of like what they're talking about, but online they're a gray little circle and, you know, they're pretending as if they don't exist. These people matter and their opinions matter. And just because they're working inside the belly of the beast doesn't mean that they should not have a voice. So I think he's just wrong.
I saw Cerno tweet. He was like, I know 5 Afghani veterans who are anonymous troll accounts on Twitter because they can't show their face, so they'll lose everything. And he's like, he said, Jordan Peterson is a dork and he wouldn't like, you know, he wouldn't like he couldn't handle it in like the real world within a group of men. And, you know, I'm not trying to dunk on the guy, but it's like, he says, be a monster. You know, you got to be a, like, bro, you are not a monster, bro. Not physically, not emotionally. Like, you know, so taking your own advice, I think, would be good. And also, yeah, I understand that if everybody showed their face and showed their name and their ID and stuff like you do on Facebook, in some ways you could probably keep down some negative comments. What I've seen on Twitter, though, even though, you know, there are some anonymous accounts that are super rude, I've seen more anonymous accounts posting good stuff, posting edgy stuff, and posting stuff that I know they don't want to post with their face because they're scared of the repercussions in a tyrannical world. So although I don't agree with every response to my Twitter, sometimes it's like people complete things for me, you know? So even the debate I did, like there's thousands of comments. Everyone has their own perspective. Maybe I missed something. Maybe I didn't think something. I like a majority of anonymous accounts for the most part, and I think they provide value to Twitter. I know there's some like douchey accounts, but he's so fragile. Somebody posted, you know, he did a message to Muslims and a message to Christians. And then they literally just said, where's your message to Jews? Like, it's a funny question because he did do like, he's like, I'm Jordan Peterson and I have a message to all Muslims and message to all, like he's a prophet or something. So, okay, where's your message to the other Abrahamic faith? Which is, I've said it on my show multiple times because I think it's funny. And he was like, you troll demon piece of coward. Like, he's like, I'm like, bro, that's not even a bad take, dude. Like, he gets so mad at like honest or his, you know, his interview with Netanyahu. Netanyahu, honestly, he's a very likable, convincing guy. I don't know much about the history, but if you don't know much, I'm sure people will believe him. But the ones who do know, they disagree. You know, there's all sorts of things, but he didn't push back on even things that he knows about, like the COVID tyranny. You know, Netanyahu said he did such a great job and they got out of it early. That wasn't true. Pretty much no pushback. So I think he's mad that people are questioning Daily Wire and like Jewish stuff, which is understandable. It bothers him. But I think people are just seeing the double standards of if he interviewed Trump, I guarantee he would have gave a harder interview. Whereas, you know, he wasn't really pushing back on certain points, which is fine. I'm not saying it makes you should take down the interview. But when someone says, hey, you could have done more, like someone said that on my interview. Hey, you could have pushed back harder. Like, imagine if I respond, I'm like, you troll demon coward piece of garbage. Like, I'm like, no, that's true. I probably could have, but I did it the way I did it. And it is what it is. But it's so mad, dude.
I have this with every interview. And oftentimes the comments I'll get, they'll be like, oh, you should have, you know, hammered this point. And I'm like, you're right. I forgot. Or like, oftentimes, and as you know, oftentimes during an interview, you'll have a thought that's really like good, but then someone will keep talking for 2 minutes. And by the time it's your turn, you've forgotten it. So like stuff like that happens. But I never, for the most part, I never take it as like, oh, I don't, you're a troll demon. I don't need any feedback. You are,
I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I've gotten to that point before where like this, the circular argument that bothered me, in my perspective, he's wrong about this, but when people, like when it came to Trump and the vaccine and the mandates, like that, people know here if they've watched me, they're probably annoyed at it. I've gone in circles because people just say the same things over and over. And like, it used to get to me, but then I had an awakening one day and I'm like, I got to stop. Because on Twitter, it's not even like a physical argument or a conversation. It's all text-based. And a text-based circular argument can drive you crazy, especially sure. During the lockdown. Like people were like, trust the plan. The lockdown's good. And I'm like, the lockdown's bad. I'm not even joking. I got harassed by like dozens of Q followers. And I'm not saying everybody acts like this. I'm just saying they were mad that I was against the lockdown because they thought the lockdown was going to arrest the pedophiles. So I'm arguing with these people on Twitter. They're going nuts. They're driving me nuts. And I've come to the conclusion that I just, you know, I had to take Jordan Peterson's advice and just clean my room because, you know, I was getting into that argument on Twitter and it definitely drove me crazy. I was like, well, ignore it at a certain point.
Yeah. Just last note I'd like to make on that is like, it's just so obviously correct that if you're going to make just for the record, I believe that they were really beautiful messages that he said to the Muslim community and to the Christian community. He could have done a beautiful message to the Israeli community or the Jewish community. He didn't do it.
Right.
Like there's a reason he didn't do it because it's politically, you know, almost suicidal. And the sad thing is, I don't think it needed to be. I don't think that if you watch those ones to the Christians and the Muslim community, I don't think there was anything objectionable in either of them. And he could have done it the same way with the Israeli community and he chose not to. So, you know, just deal with the pushback or turn off your phone. It's real easy.
Right. And you're going to get some sort of blowback, like, especially as someone, I don't think he's Christian or Muslim or Jewish, which is fine. But like, I think to lobby yourself and be like, this is my message to all Muslims. Like, you're almost putting yourself on a pedestal. Like, I, Prophet Peterson, will tell you, billions of Muslims, how to think and act. Like, listen, he's an epic character on earth. So it's like, I understand that he's putting himself in this position, but if you do that to an entire religion and you're not part of that religion, okay, then you do it to that religion, you're not part of that religion. It's not crazy for someone to ask you why you didn't do it to another religion. Like, even the person who asked it, he's like, you troll demon piece of sewage, you rat gutter rat. I'm like, bro, that it's a funny question. And then people called him Juden Peterstein, you know, like just trying to say he was more Jewish than that. Like,
I condemn you back to hell other troll brethren.
He gets so mad at it, though, where it's like, bro, you can't fight the internet, especially what I've noticed. Like, the internet can get it wrong sometimes, but for the most part, when you get ratioed, you can't fight it. You know, like, the internet wins, the trolls, all these people, like, you just can't. So you got to laugh at yourself. Like, some people, I've heard every theory under the sun in the comments. People call me Jewish all the time. I'm not, but it's like, I get it. I have a big nose. I'm Italian. You know what I'm saying? I get the dynamic of people thinking, oh, he looks like this. He could be this. I've gotten accused of being Chinese spy, Israel spy, like every single thing. And it's like, it doesn't even make sense. I'm like, why would I work for China? I've never even been there. But I'm not saying you have to agree with it. But if you're just getting so mad at it, you know, where like, it's especially just like a joke name, you know, I think it only amplifies the trolls. Like, then they see it and they're like, oh, I'm going for this. And then it just like never stops. Like, get the guy off Twitter.
Well, that's the problem, is like, now the trolls are smelling blood. So he's got a real problem on his hands. You're exactly right. If you can just roll with the punches, realize like, okay, you know, I'm going to acknowledge some of this hate I'm receiving, and I'm going to distill it down into some sort of like compromise position. But he's not doing that. He's just going hard in the paint and saying, I would like to see all of these people sent back to hell, is what he said. You know, it's like, it's so over the top. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But at the end of the day, he just needs to touch grass like really badly.
Someone said best response is to laugh with them. I think so, especially if it's like a lighthearted one, because there's way worse stuff, especially for Jordan Peterson. I'm sure he's dealt with way worse than like a joke.
Hell yeah. He's gotten thousands of death threats, I'm sure.
So we're going to take the rest behind the paywall. I rarely do this, but I owe Patreon. So I'm going to let you know where you can find Clint in a second. But we're going to talk about the Brittany Griner situation and the fact that Ye might have been trying to meet with Putin, which is pretty crazy. People wanted me to talk about Brazil and what's going on there. We're going to talk about DeSantis and Trump with the injection, the Fed's recent statements, Iran's protests, Elon Musk's brain chips, my analysis of my debate with Rudy Rockman. You know, I'm going to weigh in on that and a few other things. So if you want to see that, it's patreon.com/raretalk. The link should be in the bio of YouTube and Facebook, and I'm going to post that later today. We're going to have that privately, and then that's going to be the Dream Rare Secret podcast. I think I'm going to do the video version. So patreon.com/raretalk. Liberty Lockdown, Clint, where can they find you?
At Liberty Lockpot on Twitter. I have been shadow banned forever, so please give me a follow over there, folks. And then if you just want to search Liberty Lockdown, it's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all over the place. Clint Russell, thank you for having me, man. It was a blast. All look forward to the paywalled version too.
Thank you. And someone said Anomaly doesn't have a big nose for a guy. Are guys allowed to have bigger noses or something? You know, I gotta breathe up the air. I got a big brain, so I need a lot of oxygen flowing through my nose. It's all good. Appreciate you guys. Have a good one. And we're going to have more behind the paywall.